So we have two readings tonight, and the first one is from Matthew 9, starting to read at verse 9. The calling of Matthew. As Jesus went from there, he saw a man named Matthew sitting at the tax collector's booth. "Follow me," he told him, and Matthew got up and followed him. While Jesus was having dinner at Matthew's house, many tax collectors and sinners came and ate with him and his disciples. When the Pharisees saw this, they asked his disciples, "Why does your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners?" On hearing this, Jesus said, "It is not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. But go and learn what this means. I desire mercy, not sacrifice. For I have not come to call the righteous, but sinners." And the second reading is from Mark 2, starting at verse 23. One Sabbath, Jesus was going through the cornfields, and as his disciples walked along, they began to pick some ears of corn. The Pharisees said to him, "Look, why are they doing what is unlawful on the Sabbath?" He answered, "Have you never read what David did when he and his companions were hungry and in need? In the days of Abiathar the high priest, he entered the house of God and ate the consecrated bread, which is lawful only for priests to eat. And he also gave some to his companions. Then he said to them, 'The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. So the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath.'"
Brilliant. Thank you. So we've got two passages here that I think highlight something of what's going to be unfolding as we see, as we meet Jesus more and more through the Gospels. First of all, we have Matthew. He's a tax collector. Now, tax collectors back then were thought of even worse than they are now, because they were scorned and reviled, because essentially what they did was they worked for the Roman Empire. They worked for the Roman government, and they took money from their own kinsfolk, their own Jewish family, if you like. But what they would do, I mean, that's bad enough, but they would inflate the tax bills, they'd line their pockets with the excess money. And basically, if you're a tax collector, you were lumped in the same category, the kind of same moral grouping as a prostitute, because you had already sold yourself. You'd sold yourself to a government instead of to an individual. But they were pretty much seen as the same kind of moral strata. So they weren't thought of as ever so highly. And the kind of religious people who we encounter when he has his party, who come along and grumble and sort of say, "What's going on here then? How come you're mixing with tax collectors and sinners and prostitutes and all these people? How come you're doing this?" But the religious people, it's worth kind of introducing them, because as we go along meeting Jesus, we're going to bump into these characters a lot as well. There's the Pharisees and the Sadducees. The Pharisees and the Sadducees, they were the two kind of ruling groupings of the Sanhedrin. The Sanhedrin was the kind of religious council, and it was made up a bit like our government. You know, there's the kind of ruling party and there's the opposition. Well, the ruling party were the Sadducees. They were the ruling party. They actually had all the top jobs in the temple, because don't forget, it was Herod's temple, and Herod decided who was going to be in charge there. So because they were willing to kind of get cozy with the Romans, they got all the good jobs. So they got the good jobs, the high priest and all that kind of thing, because they were willing to collaborate with the Romans. And then you have the Pharisees. And the Pharisees, they're, if you like, they're the opposition party in the Sanhedrin, and they have no power, you know, because they're not willing to compromise. But what they do instead is they make themselves quite extreme in terms of being nationalistic, and so they make them kind of, they make themselves sort of super Jewish, and so they're really religious, they're really hot on the law, they're really they're kind of very popular with the people, but they've got no clout. And the Sadducees have got all the clout, but none of the people like them because they're collaborators. And so even though they can't stand each other, They need each other. The Pharisees need the political clout of the Sadducees, and the Sadducees need the kind of popular and moral support that comes with the Pharisees. Can you see? Isn't that an interesting dynamic? And they're constantly jostling. They're constantly, I mean, it's like Prime Minister's Question Time, constantly scoring points off each other. And into this kind of stone-throwing environment, Jesus walks into the middle, and he gives them something in common. They hate him. They absolutely hate him, because he's going to rock the boat as far as the Sadducees are concerned, and he's going to call the Pharisees on the way that they're applying or misapplying God's law. And so he's going to be kind of sort of uniformly unpopular, but in different ways. So we're going to see these different things working out. I've got a quote. I think this is Charles Swindoll. I'm not entirely sure. It says, "While the Sadducees maintained control of the temple, they did so at the pleasure of Rome. They needed the religious clout of the Pharisees to control the religious people. While the Pharisees were extremely influential with the people, their pugnacious attitude towards Rome and lack of military might kept them from doing much more than chanting slogans." Can you see that there's just that kind of impasse? And we're going to see how that works with Jesus in the centre as the new king, coming and preaching the kingdom. He is the Son of Man. He's coming with something radically different to collaboration, and yet he's talking about being a king of a kingdom. And he's also coming with a morality that says, I've not come to break the law, I've not come to do away with the law, I've come to fulfil it, and actually to fill it full in your lives so that it comes from the inside rather than being imposed on the outside. And so they're not going to want this to happen. Jesus is going to show that the external obedience missed the heart of God's good law. And that's what happens really with this thing about the Sabbath. And the reason that it's such an interesting passage is because he actually annoys both. He comes in and he starts talking about the Sabbath. That's Pharisee territory. They know about the Sabbath. But he also says, do you remember when King David did this thing and the temple and he took the bread? And so he's managing to annoy two groups of people in the same sentence. That's quite a gift, isn't it? You know, to be able to do that. But you can see that as far as he's concerned, they're not separate things. They all come together, but they only come together in him. And so we see this remarkable thing. And just to remind you what God's law does say in Exodus 20, it says this: remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. 6 days you'll labour and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you, nor your son or daughter, nor your manservant or maidservant, nor your animals, nor the alien within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea, and all that is in them, but he rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. And Sabbath is simply to cease, to rest, to stop doing what you do on the other days. It's to do something different. And God's intention was that, and we look back in Genesis and then onwards, because it's something that came before Moses' law in Exodus, which was much, much later. The principle of Sabbath was rest and refreshment and enjoyment of God's creation. It was something that was good, rather than something that was imposed. Oh, you must do this. I mean, when I became a Christian in the early 80s, it seemed to me that Sunday was a day when you have no fun, and basically, you know, if you're going to do anything, you listen to Cliff Richard, because he's the nearest thing to, you know, alive that you can get. You know, that's really not, I don't see that in God's heart. I've got nothing against Cliff Richard, don't get me wrong. But that whole thing of, it was meant to be something that where you kind of breathe in and look around, you connect with the people that you love, you you worship God, you thank him for everything around you. Otherwise, you're just on a treadmill, aren't you? 7 days a week, just on the like those guinea pig wheels, you know, just never stopping. That what he says is, step off, look around, find that, remember why you're working, look at what you've done, enjoy and appreciate that. We see that in the Psalms. Establish thou the work of our hands, you know, that kind of thing. Brilliant stuff. But it is to be enjoyed. It's not a punishment to be endured, but actually almost a reward, a blessing that God has given, to step aside and have a Sabbath, a rest where it all stops, to be refreshed, and most importantly, obviously, to thank God, to worship him, to kind of give him credit for everything good in our lives. It's an opportunity to respond to his grace. But over time, it became a law. And then during the exile, because obviously during the exile, the kind of religious Jews thought, well, we haven't got a temple because we're in the wrong country. We haven't got any buildings. You know, everything has been taken away from us. What can we do? And so they would, first of all, they established kind of synagogue worship. So that was something that they took back with them after the exile. But they got really mad keen on a kind of religious ritual, especially the Sabbath, because it was something distinctively Jewish. And so we find that by the time they'd come back from the exile, by the time Jesus is on the scene, they'd made the Sabbath an absolutely crushing burden, which is why I wanted us to hear from Isaiah 58, the heart of God, when he's talking about, this is what's acceptable, release the oppressed. Stop the, you know, the troublemaking and the meanness, and share and be kind, you know, be nice to one another. That's God's heart. The law itself is love God and love your neighbor as yourself. That's the positive intention behind the law. And what they had done is they'd made it so nitpicky and negative and such a burden that it was quite literally crushing people. The Pharisees made their customs more important than the law, more important than love, more important than loving God, more important than loving people. Because God gave his laws to bless people, not to burden them. And because the law came from God, it can never be greater than God. You know, God said it, so it's kind of, it comes from him. Its authority comes from the one who made the law. So when Jesus comes along and he says, actually, do you know what? I'm the Lord of the Sabbath. What's he saying? He's saying, I'm God. I'm greater than the law that you're making yourself and other people slaves to. That's really going to annoy the Pharisees, isn't it? You can see how that's really going to stick with them. He's basically taking back control of the Sabbath. He's taking back control of the law that had been used as a kind of club to hit people with and a yoke to burden people with. He's saying, no, there's life and there's goodness and there's enjoyment in this law. If you love God and you love your neighbor, if you experience the law in this way, you'll love your life. You won't be kind of staggering under the weight of it. And so our call to worship, he says this, come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. He's saying that in the context of Roman oppression, corrupt religion, and impossible demands from the Pharisees. And so he says, come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. Jesus makes this invitation in relation to Moses, in relation to the law, and therefore the Pharisees and organized religion. He's calling people out of an oppressive religion and a corrupt religion, and he's saying, come to me. Don't come to a religion, come to me. And that's the most important thing that any of us have ever done, isn't it? As we've come to Jesus and we put aside all our preconceptions and we've realized that he's the one that offers us hope, that he's the one that offers us life, that suddenly everything changes. He doesn't say, you know, come to temple, all you who are weary and heavy laden. He doesn't say, come to this ritual. He doesn't say, come to poverty or pilgrimage. Why? Because he is the one who brings us to God. He is the one mediator between God and man, Paul says to Timothy. He is the one who is the way and the truth and the life. He is the one who is the door. He's the one who's the good shepherd. Unlike the puffed up Pharisee and the corrupt Sadducee, he's humble. He's friendly. Can you imagine that? He's friendly, a friendly rabbi, and he's welcoming sinners. And so he says to the weary and burdened, this is who I'm talking to. I'm not talking to the corrupt one that wants to hold his power. I'm not talking to the self-righteous one that doesn't want anyone to challenge his moral authority. I'm talking to the one that is absolutely shattered, that is staggering under the burden of impossible demands. If you are weary and you're burdened, come to me. I've got a little story that William Barclay quotes in his commentary, and I think it's worth reading to you because it's a parable that the rabbis of the time of Jesus would tell, and it tells it just illustrates that even they at that time thought that the burdens and demands of the law were impossible and negative, but they couldn't find a way out. Listen to this. It's such an interesting little parable. It's a very Jewish parable as well. And it's attributed to Korah, who wrote some of the Psalms. Probably wasn't, but it gives you an idea of the kind of caliber of the person that they were thinking of. So it says, there was a poor widow in my neighborhood who had two daughters and a field. When she began to plow, Moses, i.e. the law of Moses, said, you must not plow with an ox and a donkey together. When she began to sow, he said, you must not sow your field with mingled seed. When she began to reap and make stacks of corn, he said, when you reap your harvest in your field and have forgotten a sheaf in the field, you mustn't go back to get it. And you shall not reap your field to its very border. She began to thresh, and he said, give me the heave offering, and the first, and the second tithe. She accepted the ordinance and gave them all to him. What did the poor woman then do? She sold her field and bought two sheep to clothe herself from their fleece and to have some profit from their young. When they bore their young, Aaron, i.e. the demands of the priesthood, came and said, give me the firstborn. So she accepted the decision and gave them to him. When the shearing time came, she sheared them. Aaron came again and said, give me the first of the fleece of the sheep. Then she thought, I can't stand up against this man. I'll slaughter the sheep and eat them. Then Aaron came and said, give me the shoulder, the two cheeks and the stomach. Then she said, even when I kill them, I'm not safe from you. Behold, they'll be devoted to God. Then Aaron said, in that case, they belong entirely to me. And he took them and went away and left her weeping with her two daughters. Can you see that misapplied without any love for God or love for your neighbor, the law is crippling, isn't it? And so Jesus comes and says, come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, all you who are poor and just can't get a break because of religion, come to me. And you'll find rest for your souls. Jesus offered a rest, a Sabbath, a chance to enjoy, not more limitations and regulations. Religion says, work more, try harder, do this, don't do that, give more, give more. God still isn't pleased with you. Push, 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 all the time. Whereas Jesus says, take my yoke upon you and learn from me, and you'll find rest for your souls. Jesus cutting across the corruption and power grabbing of the Sadducees and the moral high ground and impossible demands of the law. Where, I mean, he said, you know, you Pharisees, you lay all these burdens upon the people and you won't even lift your little finger to help them. He cuts right across that and shows the real heart of God in God's good law. He says there's a rest. It's not a burden. It's a release. So come to me. And any of us who are burdened, any of us who are weary, any of us who have tried and tried and tried to somehow or other please God by our performance, by the things we do or by the things that we don't do, he says there's a better way. Come to me, learn from me, walk with me and rest. There's life. He's a friend of sinners. He's not a big meanie. So if that's you today, tonight, and I know that certainly at different times in my days and my week, that's certainly me, he calls us to come and to be with him.